We begin the current daf, Masechta Bava Basra, daf Lamed Hei. Begin on the bottom of the Lamed Dalem and Beis, three lines up at the bottom of the Amud. The Gemara continues the discussions of the previous dafim, highlighting different incidents which illustrate the halachas relating to the title of our Perek Cheska Sabbatim, who is the rightful owner, who's taking possession of this disputed land or house or things like that. So the Gemara begins, Zeh Mishalav Vaisai. One guy says, this I inherited from my fathers. And this guy says, no, I inherited this from my fathers. And this is whether they're disputing a boat or disputing a piece of land. But the point is that neither one of them has a chazaka or testimonies of witnesses of one over the other. They're just both saying with no proof either way. He's saying he inherited from his father. He says he inherited from his fathers. Amar of Nachman, he says, kol de olam gvar. The halacha in this situation is, whoever's stronger will be the one who's the victor. Who's the one that wins? Whether it be through proof or through might. Either way, we're not getting involved in the courts. We're going to let them fight it out. And that is the Gemara. Why is this case of Rav Nachman any different than a situation when in front of us, the courts, there come two documents on the same field of Reuven, where Reuven had written a gift document to both Shimon and a gift document to Levi. And both of them were written b'yom echad, on the same day. So it comes out that neither one of them are more muhzik, are more rightful of the presumptive owner of this field more than the other one. Because as Rashbam points out, even if it's revealed that Shimon's document, although it's on the same day, was written in the morning and Labor's was written actually later in the day, his was written earlier in the hours, that will not have any halachic significance unless it is in Yerushalayim. As the Gemara Masechet Ksuba says regarding the incident where the mother of Ram Bar Chama, in the morning she wrote the estate to Ram Bar Chama, and in the evening she wrote it to Mar Okva Bar Chama. And the halacha was still that they gave it to Mar Okva, even though he was later in the day, for this same reason, where they said, what do you think, we're in Yerushalayim? Where there they write the hours. And since, like in this situation where Reuven didn't specify to Shimon the hour, so it comes out that he wasn't meriting it to him, even if he wrote it to him earlier in the day, it was going by the day, where therefore they're all both significant, the same thing as if it was given at nighttime right before it got dark. And since it didn't say the time, so they're both equal. So even if one's early in the day, unless it's in Yerushalayim, does not have any halachic significance. So regarding such a situation, so who do we give it to? Both of them have a document of that it was gifted to them on the same day. So as we continue on top of Lamed Hamed Aleph, the Rav Amar Yachleiku. So Rav says the halacha is that since it's a doubt, so we divide it. And you cannot say, as we generally say, when it's a safek hamitza mechaver of a raya, that, okay, so you have to prove if you want to take away from the other one, because here neither one is more muchzik than the other one. The one who gifted it is not here anymore. You just have these two people have the same documents. There's no way of proving one way or the other. And therefore, says Rav, say, okay, you split it, you divide it between each other. Ushmul Amar, he says no. He says, shudid didaini. The word shuda actually means to say, like, to throw, as the Targum translates by the Az Yashar, Yaravayam, Shad Biyam. So, what Shmuel says, the halacha is that for whoever the judges see fit, that it would seem like the one who gifted it would have preferred to give it to this one of these two, because either we know he was a better friend of his, or he's a closer relative, where it must have been that was the one who he really concluded that he was going to give it to. It's to that person that we give the land to. Because at least now, maybe, we're going to be giving it to the rightful one who was the one that was supposed to get it from the one who gifted it. But, says Shmuel, if you're going to say like Rav that you split it, for sure one of them is going to be taking half of it incorrectly. Because he wasn't giving it to both. He knows he could only gift the whole thing to one person. And he definitely had in mind one, we just don't know which one. So says Shmuel, so the judges get to decide who is the one that they see fit. Not like Rav, who Rav says, no, we divide it, and since we don't know, each one gets 50-50. So the Gemara's question is, so then the same thing in the case that Rav described, you should say, either like Rav or like Shmuel, either say that you split it, or you say, Shuda, that the judges get to decide who gets the whole thing. Why does Rav Nachman say that halacha is going to be called Dom Gevar? Why is it any different than Rav and Shmuel, where you should either divide it or let the judges decide? Why should it just be that whoever's stronger could get it? So says the Gemara, it's different. Hasam, over there in the case by Rav and Shmuel, regarding these two different documents that have the same date, there, leka lamekam ala demilsa. It's not possible to ever really verify and clarify the situation. whether today or a later day, that witnesses should come and prove and that let one of them take it versus the other one. Because, as we said, the documents both have the same exact date. And even if there are witnesses that are going to come at a later time and testify, oh, that we saw this guy, his was written in the morning and this guy's was written later in the day. But as we mentioned before, the hours are not halachically significant unless in Yerushalayim, as we said before. So you can't say that that's going to be verified. Moreover, neither can you say that maybe it's going to be verified that actually one of theirs, although they're written on the same date, one of theirs was given at a later date. That one was a day later or a month later, and then so therefore one was before the other one, because since it was written both on the same day, we assume that both of them were given on the same day, as it seems to be indicated on the terminology of what's written in the document. So they both seem to indicate either way. So therefore, we have no reason to assume that it's ever going to be verified to prove one way or the other. So that's where Rav says that you divide it. And Shmuel says, should the Didaini, that the judges get to decide, because since it's never going to be clarified ever, who's the judgment like. So the court tries to get involved and judge it according to what they see fit, whether that means like Rav to split it, or like Shmuel, which means to say that the judges get to decide the whole thing where it goes to. However, Hacha over here in the case of Rav Nachman, by the piece of land where these two people are disputing it. There's no documentation, there's no testimony for Chazaka, there's nothing over here. They're just saying, oh, this is my father, and he says it's from my father. It is possible that it will be verified at some point if, let's say, witnesses will ultimately come and say, oh, we know that it was this guy's father's and not this guy's. So therefore, there it's not appropriate to say, like Rav and Shmuel say, to either divide it or to let the judges get involved, because maybe if we're going to go ahead and divide it now, or the judges are going to give it to one person that they see that he's more of a friend than the other guy, maybe at a later point in time witnesses are going to come and going to contradict the judgment that we already said in court, and therefore it's not appropriate for the court to get involved for a judgment which might end up being distorted based on facts that are going to come at a later point in time. Rather, says Rav Nachman, we leave it and let the stronger man win. Until at some point, maybe witnesses are going to come, and then it'll be clarified, and then the judges will get involved and base the judgment based on that. But to jump in and say one way or the other when we don't have all the facts, where it could be some facts will come up later on, we don't get involved and we leave it called Olam Gevar. In contrast to Rav and Shmuel, where there's nothing that's going to change, and this is the end of the line, so then we get involved and we either split it or we say Shudda D'Dayna. Sigmar says, fine. But there's still a question on the halacha of Nachman. Because a Maishna, why is the halacha of Nachman different, mehaditnan, from this that we learned in the Mishnah Masechet Bava Metzia? The Mishnah says, Hamachlev par b'chamor v'yoldev. Someone swapped. Kinyan kol chalipin. You could swap one thing for the other. He's giving him the cow, and he's giving him the donkey back in return. So they made a swap, and the cow gave birth. Now, the situation is that since the owner of the cow already drew near him that other person's donkey. So automatically, through the kinyan of chalipin, which is when one person gives one person an item, whether it could be a kerchief, it could be the item that he's giving him, then the other person's item, which in this case is the cow, the cow's owner, once he draws that other person's donkey, his cow automatically, no matter where it is, gets transferred to the ownership of the one who was the original owner of the donkey. Now, the reason for this is because the metatlan, movable items like animals, are niknim b'chalipin, they can be acquired through a transfer. As the Mishnah says in the Sechtes Kedushin of Chavcha Saman Aleph, kalanasid nam ba'acher, whatever is a movable item that can be transferred into monetary value for something else. So once one person acquires one of the items, so automatically the other item that's supposed to get returned to him is acquired automatically with the kinyan chalipin. Now, therefore, that creates the situation that the Mishnah Masechet Bava Metzia is talking about. So therefore, it's not known this cow that gave birth, in whose property did it give birth? Because they didn't yet see the cow. The cow was somewhere else. And the owner of the cow took the donkey. Automatically, that means to say his cow gets acquired to the owner of the donkey. They come then a few days later to where the cow was kept, and they say, whoa, it had a baby. Well, we don't know in whose domain it had given birth to. Because at the moment of the transfer, it automatically was the buyer's. But we don't know, was it before that or was it afterwards? Now, the reason why specifically has to be talking about hamachlev par b'chamor is because if the sale was done with money, where let's say the owner of the donkey had paid the owner of the cow with money, that wouldn't be a valid situation for the Mishnah Masechet Bava Metzia to talk about. Because paying money, ma'is, are not kindness, and they could back out, they could retract. And whereas if, let's say, the owner of the donkey had already done Meshicha, which is one of the primary kinyonim by Metaltlin, and brought the cow to his house after he had paid money, so then you wouldn't be able to say the situation where the seller would be able to say that the cow gave birth in my domain because it's already in the house of the Lekech. Therefore, that's why the Mishnah Mizrach Mamsiya describes specifically a case of chalipin, of a transfer of a chamar and a para, and not with money. Now, in Perek HaShel, the Gemara actually asks, but let's see, since it's a doubt, let's see, okay, so in whose property is it right now? And then, by default, the other one will be a Maitze Mechaber Olav Araya. The Gemara answers, it's an agam, it's in a swamp, it's in no man's land. So therefore, we can't say it's in anyone's chazakah. And because of that, it's a rightful doubt between the original owner of the cow and the new owner, who's the original owner of the donkey, that in whose domain was the child born. So that's one case. V'chein, the same thing applies to Hamaycher Shevchasa V'yalda. If someone sold his maidservant and she gave birth, now, here in this case, by the maidservant, it talks about selling, not chalipin. The reason for that is because avadim are like karka, slaves are like land, which are acquired with money, even without meshicha. So from the moment that the buyer gave money, automatically, no matter where the maidservant was, even so she could have been a dachshund, she could have been somewhere else, it's acquired to him wherever she is. And now, therefore, when they finally catch up with the maidservant a few days later, and they say, whoa, she gave birth, we don't know in whose domain was it at that time when she had given birth, because they never yet saw her since the time that they gave money. So, says the Mishnah, Zeh Omer Achule Mecharti Yalda. So the original owner says, oh, wait a second, she gave birth before I sold it, it's mine. Vezeh Omer Mishle Kachti Yalda, whereas the buyer says, no, she only gave birth after I bought her. So says the Mishnah, Yachleiku. So then you go ahead and you divide the profits of the child, you split it between the two of them. Now that the question is, over here in this situation, it is what we mentioned before of Ika Lameka Malo de Milsa. It could be, possibly, verified at some point, if witnesses are going to come and testify, that we know what time it was when you guys had made the sale, and we also know what time it was when she had given birth, and that will verify in whose domain the child was born. And even so, the Mishnah Masechet Bava Metzia says that we don't say Kol Dom Gevar, which that's a difficulty to Rav Nachman. The way we answered for Rav Nachman why he doesn't say like Rav and Shmuel is because there it's lekem 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 lekem. You can't verify anymore. So you can't verify anymore, so they'll get involved. When other data of verification might end up coming up, that's what Rav Nachman says. So call Dom Gevar, we're not going to get involved and make a psak when it might be overturned later. Yet here in the Mishnah Masechet Bava Metzia, it's also it's possible that it will be verified later, and still, in spite of that, we say Yachloiku and not call the Om Gevar like Rav Nachman. Says the Gemara, there's still a difference between that Mishnah and Rav Nachman. Hasam, over there in that Mishnah above Metzia regarding the guy who swaps his cow for that person's donkey, Lahai, as we continue down the days, Isle Dara de Mina, for this owner of that animal, there is a likelihood of a loss of money. For the other one, there's also likely a loss of money. In other words, each one of them has a definite relationship with this child that was born. Why is that? Because both in these cases of the cow and of the cow and the maidservant were owned by both of these individuals at different times, one after the other. So each one is making a definite claim on some level that it was my cow and it was my maidservant that had given birth when it was in my domain. Or maybe that it was at the time of the transfer that it gave birth, and therefore we cannot clarify who is it that had been the owner when the child was born. So therefore, over there, that's why we say, Yachlikah, that the Mishnah says you're going to split it. Now, as the Rashbam points out, that's not difficult on Shmuel, because even Shmuel would agree that in this situation you cannot say Shudda Dedaini, because that is only possible when you have, let's say, someone had gifted to two people. Where there you could say that the courts will say, okay, we'll look at who is the guy that he liked better. And that's the guy that he concluded and he's going to give it to. But here, where it's not appropriate, the concept of Shudda Dedaina, we have no reason to believe one way or the other. It's only when someone gifted and say, okay, we think he liked him better, it must have been him. But here that wouldn't apply. So therefore, even Shmuel would agree that you're going to say the halacha of Yachleiku. Now, however, Barhacha over here, in the case of Rav Nachman, where each one is saying regarding some boat or some land, we have no indicator either way or the other, and he's saying it's for my father, he's saying it's for my father, there, idemar loidemar. If it's one of theirs, it's for sure not the other ones. V'idemar loidemar. If it's that one's, it's for sure not the other ones. In other words, the land was never the other person's. And that's what the question is about, who is it? Who inherited from who? So he's saying it was always mine. He's saying it was always mine. So the Rav Nachman says, that's what you say, called Om Gevar. We have no indicator. Moreover, some proof might end up coming out. So we say, let you know, whoever's stronger win, and when we get more data, then we'll get involved and decide. In contrast, in Mishnah, in Seftes Bab Metzia, we're there, we can't just say called Om Gevar, because each one has a definite relationship with this. At some point, it was my cow, whether before or after, so we don't know whose, but we can't just say we remove ourselves totally. It's not like that, because each one has a possible loss, because each one might have been the owner. Then we say Yachleiku. But over here, we're not going to say Yachleiku. Why are we going to give one person who for sure did not have any rights to it? It's definitely one and not the others. There, since it's definitely one and not the others, and moreover, is that more data might come? That's what Rav Nachman says, called Nama Gevar. So it's not difficult from the halacha of Rav Shmuel, and neither is it difficult from the halacha of the Mishnah Maseches Bava Metzia. Now, the Gemara continues with a related discussion regarding to this halacha of Rav Nachman. Amri Nardoy, the Nardoyin said, "In bo echad min hashuk v'hichzik ba." Now, if somebody comes, a random person comes in the marketplace, and he grabs and he takes possession of this land that Rav Nachman had said that called Dalton Gevar, when these two people are disputing, saying, this was my father's. I have no proof, I have no nothing, but this was my father. In this case, no, this is my father's. And Rav Nachman said, okay, so let them fight it out. And then says Nardoinev, let's say a third party comes and he beats up both of them. And he kicks out both of them and he takes possession of the land and he says, wait a second, I'm taking possession of this land. Says Nardoin's Ein Metzin, Oisim Yadai. So the court does not remove it from this third party, even though he's not even claiming anything. He doesn't even say that it's his. And the reason why they don't remove him is because maybe either one of these first two people, it's not theirs either. We have no way of proving it's either one of the others. And either one either can prove it in contrast to the other one. So therefore, they can't remove this third person who is not even claiming that it's his from the property. As Nardoin's proved this point, because the Tanya Reb Chiya, like Reb Chiya taught in the Braisa, that Gazlan shall rob him. Someone that's a thief from many, which Nardoins interpret what Rav Chiya means to say, is like such a situation of this Gazlan who steals from these two people who are disagreeing regarding the ownership of this land, where each one's saying, he's saying it's mine, he's saying it's mine. Says Rav Chiya, lav shmei Gazlan. This third party, we don't call him a Gazlan, in other words, to force him out by judges, by court eviction, to remove what he stole. And says Nardoins, what's the understanding? Like I'm saying. Because the reason is, since neither one can prove that it's his, so they can't evict this third party, who, even though it's definitely not his, from the property. Now, Rav Ashi Amma, he disagrees with Nardoins. He says, lo'ilam, truth is that whenever you have someone who steals from Rabim, from many, like in this situation, Shmei Gazlan, he is called a thief. And the reason is, since he's not even claiming anything, he's not even saying that he owns the property, for sure we evict him. And we then put it back in front of those two original disputants, who at least they have a claim that it's from their father, and we let them fight it out. Now, Umay Loish Mei Gazan said that what did Reb Chiya mean when he said that when someone steals from the Rabban, he's not called a Gazlan? So says Rav Ashi, that's not to be a leniency the way Nardoins had learned and interpreted the statement of Reb Chiya, that he's going to be exempt from paying back and giving back the field to them. Rather, it's actually, says Rav Ashi, a stringency to say Shle Nitin Lehi Shavin. Where, although generally, when someone steals, there's a mitzvah to say that's menatikit and says, okay, you could do hashavas exeli, you could return the stolen item, and you could get atonement by returning it. Here, he doesn't know who to return it to. Because once it comes to his property, this third party who kicked him out and took possession of it, so now it's that he did gezela, he has to do hashavas exeli. But the thing is, he can't just say, okay, I'm not here anymore, I'm being mafgrid, and let it go back to the original state that these two people were fighting over it and called them gvar, because this is similar to what we said at the previous Gemara that says that we don't get involved with two people. Loi tafsina. But if tafsina, we said, loi mafkin, we can't just like put it back to its original state in the dispute, because you have to verify who to give it rightfully to. For sure, in this situation where this guy, this third party, got to it by stealing it, so he has a mitzvah to give it back to who he has to, but he doesn't know who to give it back to, because he doesn't know who is the rightful owner. And so too says Rashbam, as this Gemara says similarly, in Perikah Meches Asvin of Pechasim Beis, the Rav Levi says, how much harsher is the punishment of improper weights than the punishment of illicit relationships? And there the Gemara explains the reason is because by arayas, at least you could do repentance. Here, it's not possible to do repentance. Because someone that has inappropriate weights and has been selling to many people, he doesn't know who to return to. He stole from everybody. And therefore, says Rashbam, according to Ravashi, that's exactly what Rav Chiya is talking about. When you guys l'rabim, it's like when you use inappropriate weights, where that's something that lav shmei gazla, not as a leniency, but as a stringency. You don't even can't even do the mitzvah Shabbos gazela because you don't even know how to return it. But of course, you have to return it. And therefore, by these two people, of course, you got to put it back to them. We kick this guy out. The only thing is, says Ravashi, but he's not going to have to do appropriate tshuva because he cannot actively give it back because he doesn't know if it's this guy's or if it's the other guy's. Now the Gemara continues to explain the halacha of our Mishnah, opening up this parak that said that cheskes habatim, the chazaka of a house, or certain types of fields, or certain type of concrete things, the halacha is cheskes and shalosh shanim b'yom liyom b'chulu. The chazaka has to be a full 3 years from day to the last day. That's the chazaka that shows that even if you don't have documentation, that it must be that you're the rightful owner, and the other person that was the original owner who's claiming that it says would have to disprove that. Now, Rabbi Abba says a qualification to Salochi. He says, if there are witnesses that Dali Le Ihu Gufei, that the Ma'ar himself, the guy who's contesting this person who's living here right now and saying, what are you doing in my field? This is my field. And that's what the Mishnah was talking about, that if the guy was there 3 years, that he can't kick him out, this Ma'ar. But says Rabbi Abba, if let's say there are witnesses that testify that he himself had picked up a son of the Peiri, a basket full of produce from this ground, which he was saying that was his land. And he puts it onto the shoulders of the guy who has taken possession of the land, who's claiming that he had bought it from that person. Oh, so from the moment that this original owner assists this guy who's the machzik to take the produce from his field to that person's own house, la'altar hava chazaka, says Rababa, there immediately it's going to be chazaka, and the original owner cannot come and claim that I never sold it to him, because then you shouldn't be assisting him to gather the produce of this field and bring it to his house. Rather, you should have protested. And for the fact that you assisted him, that creates a loss, and it's as if you automatically admitted that you sold it to this person, and then you don't even have to wait for 3 years. Immediately it's going to be chazaka. However, Amr Zvid, he qualifies this exemption. He says, "V'imtan." But if the ma'arer, the one who's contesting, if he claims after that he had picked up the basket full of produce onto the shoulder of this guy who's claiming that it's his, and va'amar, he says, "L'peiris hiradativ," that yeah, I assisted him with putting produce from my field onto his shoulder for him to take it home. You know why I did that? Because I hired him to work on my field for the produce like an oris, like a sharecropper, where he gets either half or a third or a quarter of the profits. And I was just giving him and helping out him to put the produce on his shoulder for his own portion that he gets, let's say, a quarter of the profits of the field. On that, says Rav Zvid, then Neman. So that he's believed to say. In other words, then he doesn't automatically lose by the virtue of putting the fruits of this field onto this guy's shoulder. So although he helped him right away, that doesn't mean he loses it because he hired him as an aris. But he's still the rightful owner. Now, and that qualifies the Gemara. V'hanamili, when did we say that he's believed to say this, that really the land is his, and the fact that this guy was taking the pears and even helped him take the pears was just as an aris, as a sharecropper? That's b'tech shalosh. That's only if it's still within 3 years, because if it's still within 3 years, then if it was really true, as this guy is claiming that the original owner had sold it to him, then why wasn't he careful with his documentation? Documents should be held on for a period of 3 years. So within the 3 years, he could say that, yeah, prove to me that I sold it to you. I was just helping you because I hired you to work with my produce. Avala achar shalish. But if it's after 3 years, and then he claims, oh, what do you mean? For 3 years he was eating Paris and no one said anything? Because I hired him to work with the produce. That doesn't mean that it's his field. Then he's not believed anymore. Because there the halacha would be, even if he didn't help him put the basket of fruits on his shoulders, even then the ma'ar wouldn't be believed. Because only up until 3 years is a person careful with his documentation, but not more than that. And therefore, this guy should have protested within the 3 years, as the Gemara is going to explain what he should have said if he had hired him to work here on the field. What should he be protesting? So, and then the Gemara asks, Amalei Rav Ashlu of Kahana, Ila Peira Achte, if a person has someone come down to his field to work for the fruit, for example, like a case of what's called Mashkanta Desura. Mashkanta Desura is when someone loans someone a certain amount of money. Now, the guy has some type of collateral, some type of security that he gives to the lender, and that it shouldn't be wasted, the lender continues to eat from the produce of that field year by year, whether it be for 10 years or for 20 years. And when he's done with that amount of time, then he won't even have to pay back the debt because he really got paid back, the lender, by eating the produce of that guy's field for all those years. So that is Rav Ash, Rav Kahana. Now, let's say there's such a situation like that, where someone that's holding onto this field for many years, it's not that he bought it or that he owns the land. It's just that he has the rights to eat the papers of the field. So then the question is, so then my havalei, then what should the real owner of the field, what should he have been lemevet? What should he have done? In other words, it comes out that any time you have someone that's hiring someone and giving him the rights to come down to use the papers of his field for 3 or more years, will automatically lose his land. Because you're telling me that the guy's not believed to say after 3 years that to claim that he had just given it for the papers and not for the land. So what should anyone do when they want someone to have just the rights of the papers and he's not selling him the land? If it's for a period of more than 3 years. So Malaysia Rav Kahana said to him, very simply, he should have protested within 3 years and said to witnesses, I want you guys to know that you see this guy, he looks like he's the owner of the field. He's doing everything on the field. And it's going to be for more than 3 years, but within 3 years, he tells them, he's only there because I gave him the rights to work and get the papers for this amount of years. But the land itself is still owned by me. Now, in such a situation, if the machzik does not have a documentation of a sale, then he cannot claim that he had, as unusually you could, that he had a document and he lost it. And I just wasn't careful because after 3 years, people don't usually hold on to the documentation. That's not the case. Because now that he already had protested the owner of the field, so then he heard the protest, he should have been careful, as we always say, Nalach Mecha, with the documentation, even more than 3 years. So therefore, says Rav Kahana to Rav Ashi, that's what he should have done. And therefore, that's not that. That's where what you do when you hire someone just for payers. And proves Rav Kahana's point. Because if you don't say this, in other words, if you don't say what? Rather, if you say that a halfway mecha, where, in this case, where the owner is only being mecha on the land part, but is admitting to the fruit part, to the vegetable part, that this guy has rights to it. So if you're not going to say that, that would be considered a mecha. Rather, you would, if a mecha would have to be only like the Gemara says later on, of Lamechesim Abeis, where this guy's a thief, he's eating from my land, he's a thief, and I'm going to take him to court tomorrow. Well, that's a mecha. Because this guy knows I got to be careful. This guy's crazy. This guy's going to really take me to court. Maybe, are you going to say that only that's a mecha? But here, that's not a mecha. Where the guy's not going to be careful with documentation because he knows I'm allowed to be here for the payers. He hired me for that. So he's saying it's not my land? Okay, it's not a big deal. And therefore, maybe that would not be a valid mecha and the guy would still be able to claim that he bought this land from that person. And that's Rav Kahana. But if that would be the case, then Hani Mashkanta de Sura. But then, like we mentioned before, this mashkin that they would use in Surah, the kasim who it's written in it, b'mishlim shana yi'ilin, when these years of the loan conclude, tepik ara double kasim, this land will go back to the borrower without him owing me any money. Now, this mashkanta de Surah was a rabbinic injunction. Why was that? Because the truth is, when someone lends his friend money on collateral, where the lender takes his land, it's actually forbidden for the malva to consume the payers, because essentially that would be ribis, because he's lending him a certain amount of money, he's going to get paid back, and besides getting paid back, he's also eating the payers of the field, of the security, from the borrower, which is interest. But what is permitted, and that's the concept of mashkanta de surah, is, but if it's nachyasa, if it's diminishing, every time he eats from the payers, it diminishes the amount of the debt, of the loan, that's permitted. So for example, if let's say he lends him 10 mana on in the swap of the field. Now, at the end of 10 years, the halacha is going to be that the land is going to go back to the borrower, to the original owner, for free, that he's not going to owe him a debt anymore. So it comes out, and this is why it's permitted, because it's not like a loan anymore, it's actually like a sale. It's like as if every year he's holding the rights of the fruits of his land for 1 mana. So therefore, that's no element of interest, because we don't view it as a loan. Now, as Rashbam points out, although that the fruits of the field are worth double than the amount of, quote, the sale of every year, which is a mana. But still, since it is close to getting a gain, but it's also close to getting a loss, The reason for that is because the lender is accepting the diminishment of amana every single year in exchange for the payers of that field, even if it's going to be a shnas shadafin, when there's not going to be any fruits at all that year, and he's going to have a loss. So it's karv l'schar, karv l'hav. So then therefore, that's a permitted way to go ahead. It's not considered a rasha. It's not going to be a problem either of ribbis. So it was a tekanah d'rabbanon, where the Rabbanon instituted this to allow the diminishment of the debt, and also so it shouldn't be a violation of ribbis. So says Rav Kahana, that ikavishle. So imagine if, let's say, the lender would go ahead and conceal lishtar mashkanta gabe. He would conceal, make believe he doesn't have this documentation, that this field that he has is only a mashkin by him. Vamar, and after 3 years, because this was actually a program that they were doing for 10, 20 years. Now, and then after 3 years, he says, oh, lakuchi hibiyadi. You know this field that used to be this guy's? You see, I've been on this field already 4 or 5 years. It's because I bought it from him. So says Rav Kahana, hachi nami de mehemen. So what are you going to say? That the lender would be believed? And that then the borrower wouldn't be allowed to claim and say, no, it's not true. This was a mashkanta d'sura. I just let him go ahead and eat the fruits of my field. And moreover, you're going to say what? That his mecha that he would make within 3 years is not a mecha, because that's what you want to say, and that's what I'm coming to prove, because it's only a halfway mecha. He's saying, yes, he is allowed to eat the pears, but the land part I'm protesting about, if you say that that's not a mecha, so says Rav Kahana, Mesakni Rabbanan Midi, the Asi Beis, so the Rabbanan instituted something that will cause for the borrower, Lidei Pesedit, to come to loss? How could Rabbanan, who made this Takanda Mashkanta Desura, create something which is going to be a definite loss for the Laiva after 3 years, when this Mashkanta Desura could be for 10 or 15 or 20 years? Ella rather proves Rav Kahana, the idea behind it is, no, they didn't institute something that would be a loss for the Laiva, because he Boilin Lemchuye. He should have protested within every 3 years, and his mecha would be a valid mecha. It would be a valid protest. And if he's not mecha, then he's causing his own loss. So says Rav Kahana, Sahachinam, the same thing's over here. If it's true that he was only letting him come in for payrus, so that he should have protested within 3 years before the person went ahead and made a chazakah, and therefore he answers Ravashi's question, where Ravashi was asking that, wait a second, that if it's after 3 years, he's saying that he can't be mecha. Well, why can't he be Meicha? If he's claiming that it was L'Peiris Haratev, and maybe he actually did have such an operation, like Rav Zvid Tzalacha was, that within 3 years, if he says L'Peiris Haratev, even though he picked up the basket on his shoulder, he's believed to say that, so why isn't he believed even after 5 years? What's a guy who makes it that the guy's getting an Oris for 5, 7 years? What's he going to do? On that, he says very simply, go ahead, yes, make such a contract that the guy could work your field for the next 10 years, only for payers, but you own the land. But within every 3 years, go ahead and make a protest. So that he knows that don't come and claim after 3 years, say, oh, I don't have my documentation. You knew to hold on to it, and therefore, if you don't have it, that proves my point, that it is still my field, and it's not yours. Another halacha on Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav. Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav says, regarding a field that everybody knows was originally owned by a Jew. Then they saw a non-Jew for 3 or more years consuming the produce of this field. And the non-Jew claims that he bought it from the Jew. Now then there's a Yisrael Haba Machmasakim. Then there's a Jew who comes from the non-Jew. In other words, he went and he bought that field from the non-Jew. And then he also eats, he consumes the produce of the field after the non-Jew, also 3 years of Chazaka or more. So that says Rabbi Yehuda Marav, Harehu Ka'akum. That Jew who bought it from the non-Jew, who claims he bought it from the Jew, that Jew, the second Jew, is like the non-Jew in the sense that he does not have the halachas of chazakah. Rather, the original owner of the land could come and take it away from that Jew, and then that Yisrael would have to go and claim and try to get his money back from the non-Jew that he had bought the field from. Now, the reason for that is because he ultimately caused his own loss. Because he should not have bought a Jewish-owned land, or at least original Jewish-owned land, from a non-Jew, until he tells to the non-Jew, show me the document that you had bought this land from the Jewish person. Now, the reason for this is because, what does it mean he's like the non-Jew? Ma'akum ein lo'chazaka el bishtar, just like a non-Jew, does not have the halachas of chazaka. The only way we could prove it that it's his land is only with documentation. Now, the reason for that is because the halachas of chazaka do not apply to non-Jew, and therefore the same thing applies to those who come from him, because you're only coming as strong as the one who sold it to you. So, af Yisrael abamach masakim, so too the Jew who's coming from the non-Jew, in the chazaka el b'shtar, he will not have the halacha of chazaka even if it's here already for 10 years, unless if he has the documentation. Now, the reason for this halacha is, because generally we assume that a non-Jew is a thief. These are the idol worshippers. And moreover is that, so if he stole it, so why didn't the Jew protest? It's because the Jew's afraid to protest because of what the non-Jew is going to do to him. So therefore, they never instituted the halachas of chazaka by an akum. As the Gemara says later on, a similar phenomenon, the next daf, by the household of the Rish Kaluso, if they are on someone else's field for many years, it's also not considered chazaka for that same reason, because we're afraid to protest because they're very strong people and they're very intimidated. Now, this Jew who's coming through the non-Jew, even if he makes a chazaka, as we're saying, his chazaka is not going to be valid. Because it's essentially a chazaka she'ina matayna. As we always say, chazaka is not the fact that you would just say 3 years, oh, boom, it automatically becomes yours. That just proves and assists your claim in saying what? In saying that it's yours. But here, what's he claiming? He's claiming that the non-Jew sold it to me. Now, but he doesn't know how the field came to the non-Jew, that the non-Jew should be allowed to sell it to him, because he doesn't have any documentation. But if the Jewish person would claim now to the original Jewish owner who wants to take it away from him and says, wait a second, this non-Jew showed me the documentation that you sold the field to him and I saw that he bought it from you, so then the Jewish person, the second Jewish person, would be believed. Because that would be similar to when he says that I actually saw, it was in front of me, that you sold the field to that non-Jew and then I bought it from him. But the Gemara later on concludes that there the Jewish person is believed. And that's because of Amiga, because if he wanted, he could say that I bought it from you, and I ate it for, we're here, the Jewish person ate it for more than 3 years. So since he could say that, he's also believed to say that I saw you sell it to him, and it's a definite claim that he's having, which would give him the rights to it. Now, moreover, this is only because the second Jew bought it from a non-Jew. But if, let's say, there was an original Jew, and then there was another Jew, and then there's the third Jew, where he was coming because of another Yisrael, so there, even if the guy who sold it to him was only there for 1 day, Then he sold it to this other one, and this other one had it for a chazaka 3 years. Then, as the Gemara will tell us later on, the Mem Aleph and Beis, even if this guy doesn't know how the guy who sold him got it, his chazaka will be a chazaka. So this is specifically because he bought it from a non-Jew who does not have the halachas of chazaka himself. Now, on that, Rabbi says, but vi'i amai Yisrael, but if the Jewish person who he said that his chazakas don't help, you need documentation. But if he says, as a continuing type of Lama Vav Med Aleph, but the non-Jew told me that he bought it from you, then he is believed to hold on to this field through his chazaka with the claim that he's making. And the reason for that is because he entertained to make such a claim. So therefore, he could also have claimed that I bought it from you and I had eaten it for the years of the chazaka. So therefore, he's believed even that he's saying that he didn't buy it from the Jew, but that the non-Jew told him that he bought it from the Jew. And because of what's called the Migo of Malah L'Shaka, why should he lie, must be saying the truth. And that is, yeah, it must be the truth that the non-Jew told him that he bought it from the Jew, and therefore he's allowed to buy it and hold on to it, because if he wanted, he could have claimed that I bought it from you. And no one would disprove me because I'm here already more than 3 years, and I already have a chazaka. Now, that the Gemara asks on what Rabbi said, Mi ikamidi, is it really such a possible thing? The ilu akum amar loy mehem, and if the non-Jew himself would say what this guy's claiming he said, which he would come to court and say, I bought it from the Jew, he wouldn't be believed. He would need documentation. Now, the ilu amar Yisrael mishmei da'akum mehem, but now if the Jew is saying it in the name of the non-Jew, the same thing that the non-Jew told him, that, oh, he told me he bought it from you, what, that he's going to be believed? In other words, here also, it's still going to be considered chazaka she'ein imar taina, that does not have a claim with it, because even if what he's claiming is true, that the non-Jew really actually told him that he bought it from the Jew, but it doesn't make a difference. Even if the non-Jew himself told us this, he wouldn't be believed without a documentation. So what does it help that he says the non-Jew told him this? So Elam Rava, rather, what Rava says is as follows, that i'ama Yisrael, if the Jew says, kamei didi zavna akum minach, it was in front of me that I saw the non-Jew buy it from you, and then bezava nehali, and then he sold it to me. So in other words, here he's saying, I know for a fact. And that's considered chazaka she'esh mataina. Here he's saying a definite claim, where he's believed to make such a claim, that he saw the non-Jew buy it from the Jew, and then he bought it from him. So then Mehemet Sadir is going to be believed, migadi boy omale, because anyway, he has this What he could have said, that I'm not Zeventim enough. He could have said, I bought it from you. And no one would be able to disprove me. And the fact that I'm here already for 3 years would already give it to me. So even now that I'm making such a claim where it's a valid claim in its own right, that I bought it from the non-Jew and I saw the non-Jew buy it from you, so therefore in that situation, although that he bought it from the non-Jew and he does not have documentation, in this case, says Rava, the Chazaka would work for him and he would be allowed to hold on to the land.